Broadcasting live across the big sky, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Hey, I'll tell you what, we got a great show coming up for you here this morning over the next 2 hours. And then, man, I'm actually very excited for our best of program that's going to air on Thanksgiving, that's going to air tomorrow. Our producer, Caden Bjornstedt, putting in some great work. And the reason why I'm excited for a best of show is because, my goodness, we have had some crazy good content over just the last few days, over just the last few weeks, over the last month or so from our live show in Washington, D.C., Farm Bureau Convention, and just some of the deep dives that we've had here recently as well. You know, the filibuster debate that we had with former Congressman Denny Rehberg and 20-year-old Finley Warden, who was filling in for Caden the other day. We might have that at some point. And then coming up on Friday morning, John Jackson, the Joker from X. Friday's officially a company holiday for the company that our show is a part of, and so but we want to deliver a live program for our friends, especially on KJJR and Kalispell and KINX Radio in Great Falls and all of our other radio stations as well. And so John Jackson, the Joker from X, you guys are going to have a ton of fun. He will be guest hosting the program on Friday morning. Plus that'll save Caden from having to edit a couple of hours of a program together as well. Why not just do it live and then take the phone calls as well? And I know many of you don't want to be out shopping on Black Friday anyway. Speaking of shopping, man, yesterday after my wife and I got done at the gym, we thought, hey, let's go stop by the brand new Costco in Kalispell. Yeah, apparently yesterday was the official grand opening. We thought, hey, let's head over there. And I knew I'd have some friends in the house. So we had some friends over there that were giving out some free samples of some of their products. So that was really cool. But yeah, if any of you haven't checked it out yet, I've got a story on our Montana Talks website right now giving you a sneak peek look at Montana's newest Costco, an inside look at the new Costco in Kalispell. We really like the grilled cheese. There was this Ballard Farms, I think, out of Idaho. They're doing samples, and they were grilling some of the cheese. What is it, halloumi cheese? Do I remember it right? Something like that's the style. And you literally grill that cheese. Man, I was grilling up that cheese along with some steaks last night. And oh my goodness, now I'm hungry. I'm gonna have to go grab some protein chips or something here during the break when I go grab my coffee mug. But yeah, great show for you today. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour of the show, Dr. Mehrdad Kia from the University of Montana. We're going to talk about the Saudi Crown Prince's Oval Office meeting with President Trump. What has Iran been up to? The terrorists in Tehran since the successful strikes on the Iranian nuclear facilities that President Trump and our incredible U.S. military did such a successful job taking those out. The latest with Israel and Gaza and all of that, that's coming up next hour. First up, though, State Senator Daniel Zolnikoff out of Billings. He's a young guy. He's a techie guy. I want to get his take on everything going on with AI, with artificial intelligence, energy, data centers, more, plus some big news out of the White House on AI earlier this week. State Senator Daniel Zolnikoff in the House right after this.
If there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors. Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen, and subscribe.
History shows.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, bear with me for a second here. We're going to do a little bit of a mic check because we're toying around with a relatively newer setup for us here. I'm remote. We've got State Senator Daniel Zolnikoff back in studio. If for some reason the mic he's at doesn't work, we've got another studio we can pop him in. And if all else fails, we can just get him in on the studio phone lines as well. But Senator Zolnikoff, hopefully you can hear me and look forward to catching up with you.
Yeah, Aaron, I can hear you loud and clear. If you can hear me, I'm in your seat and you're across the stage, and I think that's just a fascinating way to do this interview.
Yeah, isn't that awesome? Yeah, no, I hear you great. So I'm sure you've just got a beautiful view overlooking your top floor of the Doubletree, overlooking downtown Billings, a view of the Beartooths. And I'm here in the Flathead, and I tell you what, I just love seeing snow. I am ready for snow. I'm ready for ski season. Bring it on.
That's the kind of Montanan we like to hear about. I am seeing the clouds coming in right now, and the snow is starting to fall. Won't be a lot, but it is, what, the first one of the year. So, yeah. It is what it is. You're a strong Montana guy. I prefer the summer myself.
Hey, I'll take it all. I think the summer's probably now that I have a pontoon, the summer's officially my favorite. But before it was like, ooh, I love skiing. I love the winter too. But we get it all here in Montana. That's the beauty of it. Well, hey, it's great to have you on the show. There's been so many big things happening with AI, with artificial intelligence, and a couple of big things in the news this week. Well, at least what I think are big things in the news. President Trump unveils the Genesis mission to accelerate AI for scientific discovery. That was something big at the White House this week. Plus, there's a big debate over regulating AI. There's some in Washington, including in the Trump administration, where they want to block states from regulating AI. So I thought there was just a bunch of things we could get your take on.
Yeah, it is a huge issue. It could take hours. We'll get right to the meat of it. There is a massive amount of regulation going on at the state side. And I'm not talking about stopping illicit children pictures, because those kind of laws are necessary and easy to pass, because that's not what AI should be used for. But what we see is a lot that prevents the development of AI, saying that, hey, if you use AI, then you have to have all these deployer standards and deployment standards. And it's basically, if I buy a computer from Best Buy, I can do whatever I want with it. I can be an accountant, I can be a student, I can write my novel, right? This says, well, if you use it for this way, you need these type of deployment standards. And some of these laws say if you use it for a different way, you need these types of standards. But if you use it in another way, you don't need it. So the people developing AI have to follow a deployment standard based on usage, which doesn't make sense and is extremely over-the-top heavy on the industry side. So that is a real thing. I've read these laws in other states, believe it or not, broke one apart, 10-page bill, took a few days. And it's kind of like, I'll sum it up with this. It's like we're in the era of creating cars, and the first cars did not have a lot of standards because we were innovating. But now we're passing laws to say that these new cars not only have to be built in a way that we don't understand yet, but also have to be ensure that they reach the destination they're going to, which we don't know where we're going to yet either. So think of regulating the Model T vehicles today's standards with innovation of where they're beginning on the front of exploration of this new types of technology. It just wouldn't work, but that's what we do. We don't allow innovation. We just start regulating it without understanding what we're doing.
Yeah, and with AI, with artificial intelligence, people have heard me talk about, you know, I'll use Grok from time to time, you know, which is Elon Musk's AI platform built into X, formerly known as Twitter. Very useful tool, but you always got to verify things. Like even just yesterday, for example, I for our websites about the new Costco Kalispell. So I asked Grok to compare the new Costco to the old Costco, you know, square footage difference, et cetera. And it kicked out dated information because the only information online right now is dated information, right? And so you still have to double check things. But why is AI important. Why does America need to get in, not just get in the AI space, but dominate the AI space? Why is it important to our national security? Which then leads into, why are these data centers important also?
Man, that is five loaded questions at once. So the importance of the national security side is, think if you could immediately create 10,000 bots that are could pressure a system down or could do a mass amount of research looking at 100 years of data, accumulating it, and then doing comparisons to find that we missed something along the side of research to make energy cheaper, make microprocessors cheaper using different types of elements, right? Like, we don't know what we don't know, but think of all that data being siphoned through. Now, think of that same type of bot just basically working to break everything at your infrastructure level. And if we don't have basically the strongest, best type of AI bots or agents, as you call them, then our adversaries will. And it's a race to basically who could hit the button and take out each other's infrastructure. Now, we are already in each other's infrastructure, U.S. and China. That is a pretty well-known thing. But this would take it to not just, you know, a dam here or a grid there. It would be possibly everything. So this is the race to the bottom of national security. And it's very real. Some people call it fear-mongering. I would not. But you hit on another issue that I think you nailed it. All it is inputs and outputs. Whoever controls the inputs basically controls the outputs. So that is a very scary thing we have to keep our eye on as legislators to make sure we don't have very biased outputs or wrong outputs.
Yeah, trash in is trash out, right? Is a great line that I've heard when talking about some of these AI platforms. What you said about the national security deal, so important. I'll jump in on that right after this quick break. But yeah, great to catch up here with State Senator Daniel Zolnikoff. We'll talk more right after this.
And that was a ton of fun. So former Montana Congressman Denny Rehberg, he had heard the commentary from me and from our guest producer, Finley Warden, 20-year-old Finley Warden, talking about the filibuster in the U.S. Senate. He said, hey, I got to disagree with you guys. I want to debate you guys. Let's do it live on the radio. That's what we did with Monday's Montana Talks. What are we going to talk about on Tuesday? Well, why don't you tell us? Because Montana Talks is the show where you get to talk statewide, 9 to 10, right here.
From Mondakistan to the Flathead, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
So one thing I wanted to add on the national security implications of, you know, not just getting in the AI space, but truly dominating the AI space. You know, we talk, there's a lot of our friends in the Bozeman area that are really smart when it comes to tech and computers and AI and all this other stuff, but they will, in quantum technology, for example. But, you know, when we think about supercomputers and when you eventually talk about hypersonic weapons systems and everything, it all goes together. The next space race, the, you know, potential nuclear technology. Boy, if you don't think that dominating the AI space ties into dominating space and the nuclear weapons race. State Senator Daniel Zolnikoff, your thoughts on that topic in particular?
Oh, that's a heavy one. Well, Aaron, I'll just say it is a tool and it is a very valuable one. It can take, instead of spending 2 hours on something, you can utilize, you said, Grok or something, ChatGPT, to summarize and write something in minutes. And then you're done. You just save 2 hours of your time. So computational resources maximizes what we're able to do. Just like my phone, my computer, I don't have to write a letter and wait a week for a response. I can call someone out instead of being at home. Computational resources maximizes the human, what we're capable of. So think of me being 100 times more effective than 10 times more effective than who we were, you know, in the 80s, of 3 times more effective than who we were 100 years prior to that, of twice as effective with technology. That's a good way to look at it. It just maximizes what we're able to do. So think of that on the large scale of, say the space race to whatever. Think of maximizing our abilities as a nation 100x or 1,000x. That's the key.
Well, and when it comes to AI, I think a lot of our listeners can very clearly see where the dangers could be with AI, how a tool could be misused, like any tool, right? And so I guess maybe start there. What are some of the dangers you see with AI? Because especially you're big on privacy, and you've led the nation, helped Montana lead the nation with some of the privacy laws you've gotten on the books during your tenure as a state legislator.
Yeah, so I've actually, I think, reached the level of being, confirmed the nation's top tech policymaker. So I'm including an AI bill that's right to compute, pro-computation. But even in that bill, we included that if AI is used for critical infrastructure, which it is, there has to be at least a emergency response plan in case it goes down. So we'll just say the grid, it's using AI right now. It's balancing, utilities are utilizing AI to balance the grid. Think if I have control of the computers that are utilizing AI and I lock everybody out, I do ransomware. The question is, what does the utility do to get back the grid back online? You know, if it's negative 10 degrees in Montana, we need energy to our homes and we need it now. What is that plan? So in my bill, I included that these types of critical facilities must plan and think about this. And that is, I think, a very important thing. We have become reliant on technology. That's great if we can maximize our skills, but sometimes we forget the basics and how to, do anything without a phone or a computer. And so we're starting to lose touch on that side of thing. So there's a little bit of a challenge right there.
Yeah, I know one of the things at the federal level, you know, the Trump administration is really trying to push through Congress a ban on states like Montana. So basically, you know, I could see where a legislator like you might say, hey, I want the ability to regulate AI. But, you know, we can see where President Trump is coming from is like, how are we going to dominate the AI space as a country if we've got 50 different hamstring efforts underway all across the country? But I can see where, you know, how they implement something like a ban on AI regulation. You know, I could see where that could be a problem because you could have bad actors, you know, use AI as a tool to do something bad. But they'll say, oh, well, you can't regulate our bad behavior because this is AI and you're not allowed to regulate AI, right?
Yeah, I think that the AI moratorium has been grossly misstated. It is based on development and deployment, not usage. So if I use it inappropriately, or anybody does, then they could be breaking the law. That's not what it's stopping. So if somebody uses it to make inappropriate pictures of children, that's illegal, okay? But if they use it to say you can't develop it or deploy it, and they put stringent standards that are impossible to meet, that's what this moratorium was based and focused on, just to clarify that. So
that's a good point. Very good point.
Yeah. And then I was just in D.C. talking about it was a huge AI presentation and conference. What we have a problem with at the state side is that the feds aren't doing their job. The federal Congress is not passing legislation to, clarify what is good, what is bad policy, or what would work as the country. So the states are picking up the slack, which I love because I'm a state legislator. I'd like to pass laws for the state. The problem is if you do an AI moratorium, like, are they going to put any sideboards? Because that's what's really got people up in arms. They could probably do the moratorium and sideboard simultaneously to address the issues because everybody thinks it's a moratorium on all laws, like the child issue I talked about, not just some. So, like, if Congress did both, I think this would be a much easier, smoother conversation.
Yeah, that's a great point, the way you talk about, okay, hey, this is what, you know, a federal limitation would do when it comes to regulation of AI. That puts it in a great perspective there. All right. Oh, real quick, before I get to some callers on the phone lines here as well, State Senator Daniel Zolnikoff, have you been following much this Genesis mission and President Trump's moves earlier this week to accelerate AI for scientific discovery? Anything standing out to you on that front?
Was this the executive order where basically instead of Congress passing it, they're just going to attempt to do it? That's pretty much the summary of what I know, but no, I may have missed it on my travels.
Hey, no worries. Yeah, I saw it from the White House maybe yesterday or earlier in the week. President Trump launches the Genesis mission, a national effort to accelerate scientific breakthroughs using AI and propel America into the golden age of innovation. So, yeah, I believe that was largely an executive order at this point, but I know congressional AI efforts are moving forward as well. All right, well, let's sneak on a caller here. In fact, a former member of the Montana State Legislature. Great now to hear from John Sinrud calling in from the Flathead, and hopefully Daniel will be able to hear him back in the studio as I take the call here from the remote studio location. Trying things out here today, testing them out. John, great to hear from you. What's on your mind?
Well, thanks, Aaron, and happy Thanksgiving. However, Senator Zolnikoff, I have a question. Let's bring AI down to the normal individual and not this large overscope of how AI can be used in industry. But what about if individuals are looking for AI and using it and they get wrong information, or somebody is using that to create false stories, and it just continues to go on and on and on about political rivals, or maybe you want to use that as a legal means to beat up an enemy within court and have AI create these lawsuits one after another with bad information. But an individual that is subject to that is required to respond as per the laws in Montana through the judicial system.
That's a great question. Daniel, were you able to hear that?
Yeah, I was able to hear that. So
perfect.
We have let's just do the first part of that question, not the legal side, because of course I'm not a lawyer, but using a tool like this and people getting the wrong information and believing it, just like believing what they find on the internet or on social media, I feel like our society is lacking discernment and then pushing the blame not on themselves but on technology, and then continuing to use the technology expecting better and better results versus knowing it's a tool but instead of utilizing it as a crutch. So that was a lot of the question, but we have to know that this is not perfect, and we have to understand we can utilize it, but nothing, if we expect perfect results and not understanding that the inputs are already controlled, it's like sending your kid to a school. It could be a great school or a bad school, but if the inputs of what they're being taught is something that's garbage, again, then you can't expect great results out of your child through that school system. Same exact concept with AI. So if garbage is coming out, like, it's our responsibility to vet it, look at the sources, which AI, you know, searches, link the sources, and do our due diligence, not just expect that it's the truth.
Well, I know in terms of what I do, in terms of radio broadcasting, in terms of, you know, writing things for our websites, there's very clear kind of guidelines, and I think even legal guidelines as to why you need to be very careful with how you use AI, because you are still responsible for what you put out there, right? And I would imagine that would be the same for anybody else. You can't just say, well, AI told me this, so it's got to be true, right? It's just like, well, MSNBC said, so it's got to be true. You want to talk about trash in, trash out. MSNBC is the definition of trash in, trash out. Let's sneak on another caller. We've got Bob and Bill. Great. Bob, did you have a quick question or comment? Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I do. I'm a retired energy engineer. I lived through the deregulation fiasco in Montana back in the 90s, and I'm wondering what the legislature is doing today to prevent that same scenario from happening again.
From kind of an energy standpoint with the data centers, I'm assuming?
The data centers have a huge energy impact in Montana. They're going to eclipse the current total load, perhaps, if they're fully developed, it looks like. And that impact on the energy system in Montana can really have an adverse impact on all of us, the ratepayers, residential, commercial, industrial. And that is a looming big elephant in the room on this.
Yeah.
If we don't have a regulator like the Public Service Commission that steps in and manages that, it could be a big issue. And without getting into a lot of detail, I'm interested in what the subcommittee with Senator Zolnikoff is doing about that.
That is a very great question, and a perfect transition into that topic is, Are we going to put the cart before the horse here? We know we need AI, which means we need data centers, which means we need energy. But if we put the data centers in before we got the energy, are we putting the cart before the horse? Great question. We'll throw it to Zolnikoff.
Most people out here think that taking care of one another is important. And most people would step up for a neighbor going through a tough time. Most people around here help out friends and family when they need it. But the funny thing is, most of us won't look for help when we need it. Talk to someone if you're struggling with mental health, because most people out here really care. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, so one frago we might have here in just a few minutes. Well, it's not really a frago. It was the initial game plan. So we may be getting a phone call here in a few minutes from Jonathan Savage with Fox News Radio talking about the latest when it comes to a potential peace deal with Ukraine and Russia. So we were going to try to sneak that in here in a few minutes. So if he calls in, we'll probably do a quick update with him. And then if Senator Zolnikoff is able to stick around for the remainder of the hour, we can jump right back into this whole AI data center energy conversation as well. But let's keep rolling here in the meantime. And Senator Zolnikoff, if and when you got to run, feel free to just let us know if and when you got to run as well. We greatly appreciate your time today. But Senator Zolnikoff, your take on the data center energy question. Great question from our previous caller.
Yeah, I think Bob hit the nail on the head. We cannot socialize our risk on ratepayers while trying to privatize the profits. So what that means is if the utility is the entity that builds out the energy for the server farms, we'll just make that really easy. The utility builds it out and it's rate-based. That means that every customer is on the hook for it. So say they build out 300 megawatts and then that server farm goes down in 5 years. Some scandal happens. AI is a big failure. Well, those 300 megawatts would be that with the ratepayers would have to cover all those costs. So grandma would be footing the bill. All the risk would be put on Montanans. And that is the big concern. We've seen this historically from nuclear in the 80s, all over the place. So the whole point is, there's another way to do it, which there has been a piece of legislation passed by Representative Zolnikoff that if a server farm, a large server farm, brings in their own power, basically builds their own power behind the fence, they would get a much reduced tax rate to incentivize that they build their own energy, they build their own server farm. Obviously, you'd have to... it's still connected.
Tied into the grid.
That's right, yeah.
Et cetera. Yeah. Hold that thought. Senator Zolnikoff, we'll come back to this data center conversation. Yeah, this reminds me of a great chat we had earlier this fall at the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association annual meeting. Hold that thought. We do now have, and we'll come back to you here in just a second, plus we got other callers on the phone line we'll get to as well, but we do now have Jonathan Savage with Fox News Radio joining us. I think he is out of London here this morning as well. Jonathan, great to have you back on Montana Talks. Thanks for freeing up some time for us here this morning.
Really nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, well, give us the latest on what you're seeing and hearing when it comes to a potential peace deal with Russia and Ukraine.
Yeah, it's been pretty breakneck over the last week, ever since that 28-point plan was leaked, came into the public domain last week. It was presented or reported as a U.S. plan for peace in Ukraine. And it did, though, set alarm bells ringing because in Kyiv and in Europe, they saw this as heavily tilted towards what Russia wanted to achieve. But then over the weekend, Marco Rubio met with some Ukrainians in Switzerland, and what came out of that meeting was, I would imagine, because we haven't seen it, what must be a very different document, because it's one that Ukraine seems far happier with. And from American officials, they suggest that there's just some details to iron out. So now we wait to see whether this new document is suitable in the eyes of the Kremlin. Now, the Kremlin says they've not received it officially, But they do say it's premature to start speaking about striking a peace deal in the near future. So there's different levels of optimism depending on who you speak to. Speak to President Trump. He says people are starting to realize it's a good deal for both parties. There are more meetings to come, and they are going to be crucial.
Yeah, I was very intrigued. Monday, I think it was Monday morning or maybe it was Tuesday morning, you know, the initial write-up in the Fox News Radio Rundown was, hey, you know, it's unclear as to what's going to happen with this peace agreement. And then, boom, by like 7 o'clock Montana time in the morning, there was a Fox News alert that that Ukraine had basically agreed to the peace deal in concept, essentially. But now it comes down to the details.
Yeah, it does. These details could in fact be pretty big ones because Russia has not indicated that it's in any way willing to move on the aims that it has for this war. They remain a sort of maximalist issue. And what Ukraine and its European allies will need to see are serious concessions from the Russian side. Top European official Kaya Kallas saying that the notion that Ukraine is losing the war is false, and we see zero indication that Russia is ready for a ceasefire. President Trump, of course, has been wanting a ceasefire in Ukraine for a very, very long time. What we have to think about is what may be in this deal now. When the 28-point plan was leaked, it suggested, it called on Ukraine to give up the entire eastern region of the country, the Donbass, to Russia, including parts of the Donbass that Russia's soldiers don't occupy, haven't conquered as yet. The plan also said that Ukraine would never join NATO and would have an army limited at 600,000 people, a military limited at 600,000 people. Now, the European counterproposal that came out over the weekend did not have that cap on Ukraine's military power and left open the question of future NATO membership. Also said we shouldn't discuss territorial concessions until a ceasefire is in place. So you can see how these sides are very far apart.
That's right. Well, very interesting. Always great to get your insight. Jonathan Savage, Fox News Radio. Thanks for freeing up some time for us here this morning. Appreciate your coverage.
My pleasure.
All right. Thank you very much. You know, jumping back into it here with State Senator Daniel Zolnikov talking about data centers, AI, energy. This is interesting. Robert Bryce is an energy expert. He's actually spoken at the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association annual meeting before, but he had a write-up that just came out yesterday. The electricity war, more than any conflict in history, the Russia-Ukraine war has been about electricity. And apparently, you know, an electricity-sharing agreement with that big nuclear power plant there is apparently part of the conversation in these peace deals.
Well, that's interesting. I'm not great on the foreign side, I'll be honest with you, Aaron. So just know that.
Hey, that's all right. Yeah, that's more of a way to pivot. We're going to get more into foreign policy next hour of the show. That's why I kind of wanted to just dabble in it a little bit here. But we got Dr. Meredith Kia coming up next hour of the show. So back to this conversation about data centers and energy. I saw the big data center that's been proposed for Butte, for example. I mean, this could be upwards of a $4 billion investment. When it comes to that data center in particular, there was a big data center proposed in Great Falls. I think they've now pulled out, if I'm not mistaken. I saw something in the news on that front. But this data center proposed in Butte, Nonstop Local had a story the other day that the two buildings would each be about 500,000 square feet or nearly 10 football fields in size. And so, you know, water, energy, all the above.
So, yeah, can I hit on that a little bit? The newer data centers have closed-loop systems, not all of them, of course, but that's the technology. It's working, and that means you use the same water through the whole system. So there are ways – people are always saying, what about water? That is, there are new innovative technologies to address that. So the other one was, why do we want these here? Think of if a data center is – building out their own energy or relying on a merchant energy power, like power production facility. So like not the utility. Then they have to overbuild energy. They also have backup. And you know where that surplus typical energy goes is on the grid, which then lowers market costs for consumers. So think of being like a maximist or maximalizationist of like, we're going bigger and bigger and all the excess hits the grid. And that lowers the market price of which, you know, benefits all consumers, benefits industry. That's a way to look at it. We've started to turn our minds into our mindset into thinking on how we only have so much and we have to either pick this or choose that. And that's a very dangerous way of thinking. It was a zero-sum gain approach. We need to stop thinking like that. That is how you then say, well, we can't build because we only have so much, and now we have to do quotas, and it's a way to control people in the economy. Stop thinking like that. It is scary.
And they could use the same rhetoric to shut down. Okay, if you're going to use that rhetoric to shut down a data mine, they'll use the same rhetoric to shut down a copper mine.
That's exactly right. And then it's like, oh, it's well, it's up against the people. But Bob's point was exactly on point, too, from Belgrade, that if the utility is going to sell this energy to a server farm, well, just that's just, you know, what do we call them? Make it easy. And those server farms will only want a 5-year plan that, and that it takes 15 years to pay off that asset. They are putting all the risk on the Montana consumers. So a great solution is the utility can create a subsidiary that's not putting it on the backs of consumers, where the utility builds out the facility, the power facility, the server farm can buy it, and all the risk is on the utility and the server farm, not on Montanans. That is a smart way to do it. It is a functional way to do it, and it, or those server farms can build out their own energy. So putting the risk on the back of grandma is an unacceptable standard. I said I'm the chair of energy and technology, and I've been very loud on this viewpoint.
That's a great point. The company should adopt the risk, not grandma, like you said. That's a really good message. Or have a power generation, increased power generation capacity in hand already before the build, one or the other, which I think is also what you alluded to there. All right,
yep.
Quick break. More with State Senator Zolnikoff. Plus, we'll get to Tom and Billings next on the phone lines.
Your morning cup of Sean. This is the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
Finally come to the dark side. You're welcome. It's nice.
No, I'm not on the dark side. However, it just because somebody voted for Kamala and doesn't talk like Maxine Waters or, you know, the squad members or Jasmine Crockett, Bernie Sanders, I actually think might be entertaining to invite to a Thanksgiving Day dinner. I mean, you'd have a big talk. He talks like a New Yorker about socialism. He speaks in short sentences, and he's very articulate.
Just watch
and he believes in socialism.
It's the same thing. You're fine. He doesn't need to come in the house.
But I mean, you know, and I think Mara's point is it's really, you know, just have a bite of turkey and shut up and have a drink.
The conservative underground meets later today on the Sean Hannity Show.
Right now in Ukraine, with the war ongoing, elderly Jewish people are trapped in unbearable poverty. For example, Galina is a 96-year-old Holocaust survivor who has spent her life in the same village. She's now sick and alone, and now it's bitter cold. Like every day, she's got to decide whether to spend what little money she has on food, medication, or heating. Now, thanks to your generosity and the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews, you can bring hope to all of those in need. Your gift of $25 will help provide a food box packed full of life-saving essentials that will help feed an elderly individual, a Jewish person struggling just to survive. Don't delay. Your gift today will help provide these life-saving food and hope to people like Alina and many like her that are in desperate need. Rush your gift now. Call toll-free. It's 888-488-IFCJ. That's 888-488-IFCJ. Online, it's HannityForTheFellowship.org. That's Hannity for the Fellowship, oneword.org.
This is House Call for Health. The holiday season has arrived, but for many, it's not always a cheery time because it can be stressful. So how can you cope? The Johns Hopkins Mindfulness Program has a few tips. First, to accept imperfection. Many set the bar impossibly high and then feel upset when celebrations don't live up to expectations. It's okay. Imperfection is healthy and normal. It might just take a little practice to understand that. Tip two, don't lose sight of what really counts. It's a hectic time that can be overwhelming. So they suggest asking yourself, where does this fit in with the grand scheme of things? Can I use this moment of frustration as an opportunity to reflect even if this moment seems stressful, can I find a way to make it pleasant? And then there's responding with kindness. You can't change how others act, but you can change how you respond to situations. For more health news, go to foxnewshealth.com. Health Call for Health. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News.
This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Very interesting message just came in on the Montana Talks app from Cole in Deer Lodge. If the states give the okay for these data centers, what is the possibility of the state or Northwestern Energy to give some incentives to homeowners for solar panels, etc.? The idea that I got from Cole's message was, could the data centers pay homeowners to put these solar panels on the rooftop where they're basically paying for the power on people's rooftops? That's an interesting angle. I don't know if anybody's approached that one yet. Let's get to Tom and Billings real quick. We're almost out of time, but we'll have to get Senator Zolnikoff back on with us for more time on this topic. But, Tom, did you have a quick question or comment?
Well, my comment is there is a major AI data center project proposed here in Yellowstone County. Northwest Energy is basically said, oh, we can supply 1,000 megawatts of electricity by the year 2030. That is a lot. That is like 800,000 homes of power. So who's going to pay for this? I mean, solar panels and wind power is not going to do it. I talked to a guy last night at AEI, and he was like, if there could be basically like a nuclear reactor to power these data centers, because they're like, oh, well, let's see. You open the Costco just in Kalispell, they're like three times the size of that, and they take a lot of water to power.
Yeah, I guess my takeaway, Daniel Zolnikoff, is, look, we've got the power in Montana. We just need to generate it. We've got the coal. We could have small-scale nuclear and more. So, yeah, your take on just what needs to be done, big picture, with about 90 seconds to go.
The summary is that Northwestern Energy is obtaining more shares of Colstrip, and that is extra power that's not rate-based, at least at the moment. So if that energy has to go somewhere. It can't just sit there turned off. And so that's a short solution. It's not the 800 megawatts or 1,000 megawatts you're talking about, but that'd be, what, 200 to 300 right there. To build out anything, I'm going to leave it with this, Aaron. So we talked about the pros and everything. Our country's so risk-adverse that we're about to hit the point of failure that we aren't building enough energy to make any of this happen of the last hour's discussion. We are so far behind, so slow, and also the big server farm companies, data farm companies, they are risk adverse to a point that although they're willing to invest billions, they still aren't building the energy, and they need to be building from 2 years ago. I'm not seeing it. Massive national investors are shorting AI because we are not building fast enough. I think thus the executive order from Trump and what's going on at the federal level. We are too slow, and we need to pick it back up.
Well, and the importance of our judicial elections here in Montana. If we have far-left liberal judges in a far-left Supreme Court that's going to bring energy projects to a halt, hey, that's going to fall on the backs of grandma. That's going to fall on the backs of future development when it comes to winning the AI race and so much more. All right, Senator Zolnikoff, great to have you on the show as always. I was actually just messaging our producer, Caden Bjornstedt. I said, man, we got to get Daniel back in the house for another full hour or two, frankly, to talk about this topic again in the very near future. So we'll stay in touch to get you back on the show. Big thanks for your time this morning. Back with Dr. Meredith Kia next hour.
From the Teresa Barber, I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Out here in the middle of these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. That's how it feels when you're struggling with your mental health. But you don't have to feel alone. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.